Hi, good vach, good Chodesh Tammuz, and this is Parshat Chukat with Yisachar Wartel. That's right, we are moving our way through Sefer Bamidbar. And before I begin, I wanted to mention, once again, our Shir sponsored and loving memory of Sarah Baal Bat Menachem Mendel. May her neshama have an aliyah, and also nishma, all of those who unfortunately perished in the incident in Chicago recently. So may all the neshamas have an aliyah, and may Hashem have rachmanis on Klal Yisrael and the world in general. All right, so a lot to cover today. There's a lot to talk about. I'm going to try not to talk too fast. There's a lot I want to say. But last week's parsha, we basically, after the rebellion of Korach, we basically wanted to point out, Hashem wanted to point out Moshe, everybody wanted to point out that Moshe wasn't having any kind of favoritism, and that we had the episode of the staffs that showed that Aaron was actually chosen by Hashem, not by Moshe, and therefore there was no favoritism involved. They were not the ones making the decisions. It was Hashem's decision. But here in this week's parsha, Perek Chaf Pasuk Daled, Bnei Israel blame Moshe and Aaron directly and refer to themselves as Kahal Hashem, which is interesting, the congregation of Hashem. Moshe became frustrated. We see ultimately culminated in the hitting of the rock, a lot of anger. How could these people still not have learned their lessons after all this time? Now, keeping in mind, this is actually the next generation. This was actually 38 years later. It's not 100% clear on exactly where the gap is, but it is sometime between the episode of most of last week's Parsha and the death of Miriam. Last week's Parsha, or most of it at least, was in year two in the Midbar, and then Miriam's death was in the 40th year of the Midbar. At some point, probably the beginning of this week's Parsha is where it transitions, kind of leaving us with a void of roughly 38 years in the middle that we don't really know much about. But nonetheless, this was in the younger generation. They were raised, they saw what had happened earlier. They, were still told everything. People were still dying every year on Tisha B'Av. And, and this younger generation were not slaves in Mitzrayim. Or maybe they were when they were like little kids, but effectively they weren't slaves. So they didn't have this slave mentality, and therefore they should have had more faith. Now, most of these people who were around would have seen Korach, or may have seen Korach swallowed by the ground, depending on them. Certainly many of them would have been alive to see it, and would have also seen Aaron's staff blossom. And if not, they would have definitely been told by their parents. Moshe is explaining, after all he's done for them, time and time again, he's proving himself, dealing with their complaints. Why are they blaming me? He's given up so much of his life strictly for the Jewish people. And perhaps it's simply the frustration of seeing the stiff-necked arrogance of the people that even after all this time, even the next generation who didn't grow up as slaves and had everything from Hashem in the Midbar, after everything he's done, that they could not appreciate a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that the moment Miriam was gone and that they lost the Be'er and they didn't have access to water, that they wouldn't just cry out and pray to Hashem, but they complained to Moshe that they didn't have water, right? They've been fed, the man, they had the clouds of glory, their clothing were out. Their entire lives, pretty much, especially if they were on the younger side, their entire lives have been miraculous. How could they not have this faith in Hashem? And there's actually many, many answers to that, and part of which is they may have taken it for granted, but, and it's people's nature to complain, especially if you're Jewish. But basically, just this lack of gratitude and faith was just something Moshe, certainly on his level, really understood the greatness and kindness of Hashem. He couldn't, just deal with it. And that was one of the reasons that he became angry and hence struck the rock instead of speaking to it. Of course, there's many, many, many other explanations. What exactly was the Vera? Why did he hit it? Was he angry? Was he not? Etc. Did he hit it out of anger? Was his anger just make him forgot what Hashem told him and he struck it like he struck it before? There's so many different things to talk about. Another possibility, which I'm not getting into now, is that perhaps he was also very distressed over the death of Miriam, his sister, because she was so instrumental in his life. And perhaps they didn't mourn her properly. Again, so much to talk about just on these points. Like, you can give tons and tons of time to go into that. But I wanted to discuss another possibility. If you look at the wording of the following pasuk after they blame Moshe and Aaron, it says, why did you take us up from Egypt to bring us to this bad place that's not with seed, figs, grapevines, pomegranates, and water that we not have to drink? Instead of taking the blame and saying, we are more likely our parents' generation who didn't accept the land of Eretz Yisrael and didn't want to go in, and that's why we don't have the land with seed, figs, grapevine, pomegranates, etc. Like, why are they blaming Moshe and Aaron about this, right? Why they say, why did you take us out of Egypt, not Hashem, if we're going to end up in places like this? Could one dare think that the people felt, after all this, felt that it was Moshe who took them from Mitzrayim? Impossible. Of course they saw all the wonders of Hashem and knew that he was the one who led them out, but Hashem took them out of Eretz Israel specifically to go into the land of Israel, Eretz Canaan, not the endless journey in the desert. And therefore they emphasize, we are not in the place of beautiful fruits and wonderful land. Moshe, you caused this to happen, however they rationalized that, that both you and Hashem had promised us. And therefore, it's your fault, Moshe. Maybe Hashem created it this way, but ultimately, you sent the spies, you knew what could have happened, and therefore, it's your fault, Moshe, right? Don't blame us, don't blame our parents. You set us up, right? And you have foolishly directed us to a place with no water, obviously disregarding whatever, you know, faith they had in Hashem. But they blamed Moshe with this, right? So instead of merely delaying our entry to the land by a generation, you're going to now kill us all of thirst. And there's only going to be a small amount of us that are going to be going to the land of Israel. And you're going to say that, you know, okay, fine. You're going to say that, all right, fine, that we complained, that our parents complained, and that maybe we're at fault. But why make our animals suffer? They don't have water either. They did no wrong. And the fact that they have no water to drink, it must be something that you have done, Moshe. And you're no longer following Hashem's direction. We have faith in Hashem, but we don't have faith in you, and we don't believe that you're following Hashem, which, of course, is an audaciously ridiculous claim for so many reasons. But, again, so much to talk about that. Now, we're told that Moshe was, at least at the time, as the Torah says explicitly, he's the most humble man who ever lived. Yet, this time, he let the words of others get to him, perhaps the only time in his life. They labeled themselves as their congregation of Hashem, and therefore appeared to have faith in him, but they didn't have faith in Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the representative, who was the main representative of Hashem. And it very well may have been subconscious, but he took this personally, and perhaps it bothered him. Or maybe, again, this is a suggestion. And perhaps it bothered him subconsciously more than it should have, and caused him to err in how he approached the rock. Now, according to Rashi, the remedy to this was precisely what Hashem has commanded, to speak to the rock and cause it to flow to water, right? This would have addressed their complaints and would have shown that Moshe is clearly in line and divinely connected, just as he was before, with the word of Hashem. By Moshe speaking to the rock, it channels the word and will of Hashem and flows with blessing, and that they understand that Hashem is hearing their prayers through Moshe and all could be resolved. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. So, you know, we have to, so many things to talk about. The strongest question, though, that another question, a really big question you could ask is not why Moshe was punished, but why speaking to the rock to yield water was specifically a bigger miracle than, for example, having the earth miraculously opened by Korach, swallowing the conspirators and recalls as if nothing has happened. What was so specifically special about speaking to this rock that it would end all doubts about Moshe? Perhaps he knew some kind of magic secret, perhaps even though he wasn't always listening to Hashem, he could still be in Hashem's favor. Like, it was still wouldn't seemingly resolve everything. So the Be'er Mayim Chaim, which, again, is appropriate because that is another reference to Miriam's well, which is what this was taking over, the Be'er Mayim Chaim, the well of living waters. He mentions that what this made this miracle different was that it was not a miracle to punish, but one that directly addressed the people's concern, which is different. By Korach, they saw that Moshe was in line with Hashem, but it was for punishment and rebuke. It was out of fear. It was not out of love. They needed water. They asked for water, and Moshe would have acted as a leader to give them water through Hashem's hand. And therefore, it would have restored their faith in Moshe because it would have been done in a loving and peaceful manner. So that's one answer. The Fasemes, he goes over a really long time. I'm just going to briefly address it. He beautifully addresses this concern and expounds on this concept. I mean, he came earlier, but he deals with this concept. But he deals with, and he gives other suggestions in a remarkable and fulfilling nature. So Asemis writes that the act of speaking to the rock is a language of leadership. Why speaking? Because speaking, if done properly, is not a symbol of violence and physical force, but one of acknowledgement and peace. Moshe asks the rock for water, and it obliges. No confrontation, and behold, problem solved. They've had so much strife and so much machlokas, including, of course, when he did cause the ground to open, and there was more strife here. The episode in the Torah is referred to as Mei Meriva, the waters of strife. But it could have been the waters of calmness. It could have been waters that flowed from harmony and not aggressiveness. The test for the people in the situation is therefore Amuna. And they failed this test and lacked the proper faith that Hashem would help them with their needs. And they should have also had faith in Moshe. So rather, the test For Moshe Rabbeinu, it was to make people grasp the way of Emunah and distill in them the core belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as well as all his messengers and everything he does. And that's the way that Moshe and, to some extent, Aaron failed to sanctify Hashem's name. And they had such a great opportunity. They would have realized that Hashem was not merely a God of vengeance and awesome miracles, but a God of compassion and mercy, who saw to the needs of his beloved people. However, by striking the rock rather than speaking to it, Moshe demonstrated unknowingly that strife and force are necessary to get things done. Because now the generation who will enter the land and have to fight the seven nations, if they were on that level before, and this could have carried through, and there would have been blessing, it would have been glorified, they could have had such a strong connection to Hashem that fighting would not have even been necessary when they went in with Yoshua, had Moshe and Aaron not erred. Moshe responded to Bnei Israel's strife with strife, i.e. striking the rock, and thus Bnei Israel were deprived the privilege of inheriting the land peacefully and were forced to engage in strife, i.e. battle, in order to attain it. Had Moshe and Aaron not committed this seemingly benign but very powerful sin, Bnei Israel could have continued at the level of Moshe and Aaron, and they would conquer the land before that was present before them and with calmness and peace. Now, ultimately, though, the main blame is still not on Moshe and Aaron, it's Bnei Israel for causing this whole thing to happen. And that is why they would be the ones who would ultimately have to fight, or perhaps their children have to fight. They did ultimately lack the proper Emunah, and they provoked Moshe to the point where he succumbed to his human nature, because he was human, and they ultimately paid the price for it. Yet Moshe and Aaron's sin could not be overlooked on the level that they were on. But another question to ask is, what was Aaron's sin exactly? In the Torah, Hashem clearly blames Moshe and Aaron, but this whole episode seems to be with Moshe. What is Aaron's sin? Now, perhaps one answer, and Chazal will talk about this, is his greatest sin was the golden calf, but Hashem was willing to forgive him if he helped to bring the Jewish people closer to Hashem by the matter of helping Moshe speak to the rock. He allowed Moshe to act, not out of accord, but out of anger and frustration. He didn't stop Moshe from acting out of anger and striking the rock. And Moshe struck the rock twice. Aaron could have stopped him, which, again, not an easy thing to do. You know, like, Moshe is the leader. Moshe's doing this. I'm not going to get involved. But he was involved by the Chet HaEgel, and this time he should have been involved. This time he should have been involved. Before he shouldn't have. Now he should be involved, and he should have calmed Moshe down before he struck the rock a second time. Because Aaron was the peacemaker. He was Shalom. His test was to always act with love of Hashem rather than fear of Hashem. But here there was fear, and by the Chet HaEgel there was fear. Fear there by what they would do, and fear here of having to stop Moshe, however you want to explain it. And this is also what Chazal explained, that when the Canaanites heard that Aaron had died and the cloud of glory disappeared, it appeared to them as if permission was granted to wage war with Bnei Israel. For had Aaron stayed alive, the Jews would not have needed to fight a war, because Aaron was the pillar of peace. And this is the essence of the cloud of glory, that they allude to the glory or honor of man who can quiet disputes, i.e. Aaron. And in truth, Aaron's test was the love of Hashem, and when Bnei Israel were on this level, the other nations of the world didn't matter. I wouldn't have to deal with them, because the love of Hashem was paramount and only for Bnei Kol Yisrael. That's a whole other topic. But Aaron was removed from the scene now, not having been part of the glorification of Hashem, and to some extent was part of the lack of glorification of Hashem. And a fear tactic now had to be used upon Bnei Israel, with other nations fighting them, which we're going to be, you know, seeing moving on with Sichon and Og and the Midianites and everything like that, in order to instill fear of Hashem. This had to be done through more natural means, since they could no longer solely live based on the love of Hashem and the ultimately miraculous flowing of water and blessing from the rock. So, may we be zocha to have Yiras Shemayim and to fear heaven, but to act foremost with a love and deep connection and faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and everything that he does in our daily lives and beyond. Shabbat Shalom.